Welcome to the Masonic Education Short Subjects Podcast. I'm your host, Tom Howder. Purpose of this podcast is to provide the individual Mason or Lodge with a short, interesting education program along with discussion questions and resources for more research. It is my hope that this podcast will help you further your education in Masonry. Views and opinions expressed in this podcast are that of the author and do not represent the views or opinions of the Nebraska Grand Lodge or its officers, any particular Masonic Lodge or pendant body, or anyone other than the author. The subject of this podcast are the secrets of a Master Mason. Now, are there secrets or not? Some would say yes, and some would say no, but there is at least one secret of operative Masons in the lectures of the Master Mason degree. If you'd like to follow along, the information is on page 71 in the Nebraska Monitor and refers to the so-called 47th problem of Euclid. Now, when I first heard this explanation, I could remember just enough geometry to realize that the lecturer was talking about the Pythagorean theorem. Like much in our lectures, there are the facts, and then there are the things that were added for flavor, if you will, to make things sound more Masonic. So let's separate out some of the facts, and then we can get on to the secret part. A little history first. Pythagoras was in fact a man born on the island of Samos in the Mediterranean about 2,500 years ago. After his father died when Pythagoras was about 18, an uncle gave him some money, a letter of introduction, and sent him out into the world to learn. And learn he did. His many travels took him across the ancient world, and he learned many things. That he was made an Egyptian priest of sorts is true and well documented. That he was raised a Master Mason is unlikely for that period of time. Nonetheless, it was in Egypt that Pythagoras was to learn something that would make him the object of derision by every high school child that has had to take geometry, and yet one of the most powerful mathematical theorems of all time. Finally returning to his home in Samos, at age of about 50, Pythagoras started a cult following around the ideas he had learned on his travel, both spiritual and scientific, which coincidentally closely resembles many aspects of a Masonic lodge. He and his cult were not popular on Samos, and he moved to Italy and flourished there for many years. It is not known when Pythagoras died, although rumors surrounding his demise are many and quite colorful. Enter Euclid. Euclid was born around 300 BC. His claim to fame is his book, The Elements, which is actually 13 parchment scrolls, in which he systemized the Greek mathematical knowledge. Euclid's influence cannot be overstated. The recovery of his work was one of the major keys to the renewal of European civilization in the Middle Ages. In fact, Euclid's methods influenced both philosophy and mathematics well into the 19th century, an example being Abraham Lincoln, who was a very avid student of Euclid's thoughts. It was while researching and writing this set of scrolls that Euclid realized the power of what Pythagoras had left behind. So what did he discover, and why is it so important? Well, to illustrate, let's build a pyramid. I'll be reading now a quote from the book Euclid's Window, which we'll talk about later. So, the architect has laid out a papyrus with the plans for your structure. His job was easy. Square base, triangular faces, and oh yeah, it has to be 480 feet high and made of solid stone blocks weighing over 2 tons each. You were charged with overseeing the completion of the structure. Sorry, no laser sight, no fancy surveyor's instruments at your disposal, just some wooden rope. In building this pyramid, just a degree off from true, and thousands of tons of rock, thousands of person years later, hundreds of feet in the air, the triangular faces of your pyramid miss, forming not an apex, but a sloppy four-pointed spike. Now the pharaohs were worshipped as gods, with armies who cut the phalluses off of the enemy dead just to help them keep count, so they're not the kind of all-powerful deities you would want to present with a crooked pyramid. So applied Egyptian geometry became a very well-developed subject. So what do we really need to build? We're going to need a plumb, a level, and some way to make this perfect right angle so that the tips of our pyramid will meet at the top. The first two, the plumb and the level, are fairly easy to make. Tie a string to a rock, and gravity will pull it towards the center of the earth. Tie that string to an upright of some sort, and you have a plumb. Or hang it from an upright either way, and you'll have a plumb. A level is a plum in an inverted T-shape and is therefore also easy to come up with, gravity being the help here. But how do we form a perfect 90-degree angle? Well, the Egyptians had found a way to do so, but they didn't really understand how it worked or how to describe it. And it is this method that Pythagoras learned, and he was the first to understand and pass on to the Greek builders. When Pythagoras was in Egypt, he recognized that the builder, or the contractor in this case, had a worker who was called the Harpadinapta, literally a rope stretcher. The Harpadinapta employed three slaves who handled the rope for him. The rope had knots in it at prescribed distances so that by stretching it taut with the knots at the vertices, you could form a triangle with the sides of any given length, and hence angles of a given measure. For example, if you stretch a rope with knots at 30 yards, 40 yards, and 50 yards, you get a right triangle between the sides of 30 and 40 yards, the long side being called the hypotenuse, and this word in Greek originally meant stretched against. This method is ingenious and way more sophisticated than it might seem. And this is something that, in fact, if you've ever had a deck built on your house, you've probably seen people do to lay out a foundation and never realized this was such a powerful trick. Pythagoras was the first to put this principle into a descriptive formula, which is found on page 72 in the Nebraska Monitor. If you take any unit of measure and use the ratio of 3, 4, and 5 for the sides, you come up with the right angle, or 90 degrees, where the two shorter sides meet. In modern mathematics, we would see the formula as c squared equals a squared plus b squared, where c is the hypotenuse, or longer side of the right triangle, and a and b are the other two sides of the triangle. Keep in mind that until quite recently in history, we didn't have a symbolic way of expressing this, and this is why you see the text way on page 72. So let's see how this is going to work out. So what you're going to need to gather if you want to do this experiment are some things of equal length. They can be toothpicks, butter knives, pens, pencils, as long as the pencils are all the same length, of course. In other words, decide what unit of measure you want to use. And you can lay them out as 3 units, 4 units, and 5 units and build yourself a little triangle. And what you'll find is at the intersection of the A and B sides, you're going to have this 90 degree. Now, interestingly enough, here's another way of looking at it from a math side. Again, a squared plus b squared equals c squared. So if I have 3 units on the one side, 3 squared is 9. If I have 4 units on the next side, 4 squared is 16. If I have 5 units on the third side, 5 squared is 25. 9 plus 16 equals 25. The 25th part of a circle or a quarter of a circle is what? 90 degrees, the fourth part of a circle. Pretty powerful stuff, right? So a master mason can come to town pretty much as long as he's got a piece of rope or at least 3 pieces of wood, he can construct for himself right angle, which allows him to lay out the stones, the foundations, walls, and everything else without any problem at all. So pretty interesting and pretty powerful piece of observation on Pythagoras's part. So this would give us a very powerful secret that is pretty easy to pass by word of mouth and demonstration, but it's not obvious to the untrained eye or to the casual observer. And this became probably one of the first secrets of a master mason. So it was very important that this be kept because, obviously, without being able to make a right angle, you don't build very good structures for anyone. Now, is that all this is really about? Just simply a lesson in practical geometry? Well, there's another possibility, and this leads us back to another famous Greek, Plato. First, it's important to keep in mind that the lectures as we have them today were written during a time of much change from older superstitious ways to the new ideas of Newtonian science. In England of that time, there was also an architecture craze that was going on that had begun after the Great Fire of 1666. The Fellowcraft lectures are a perfect example of this scientific bias, as they are a mishmash of material lifted from a variety of sources. For example, the lecture on the orders of architecture is lifted nearly verbatim from Vitruvius. So it's possible, while this may have merely been a lesson in practical geometry, there may be also another meaning or explanation. In Plato's seminal work, The Republic, Book 8, Chapter 3, Socrates is still schooling Glaucon on the ideas of government. In the passage on the governing style of timocracy, which can be defined as a government where rulers are selected and perpetuated based on the degree of honor they hold relative to others in their society, peer group, or class. Socrates describes perfectly the Pythagorean theorem, but instead of building a structure, Socrates is using the Pythagorean theorem to describe when and how people should bear children and how it would affect the timocracy. This may be a reference by the author of the lectures to the earlier, more mystical Masonic rituals. Very deep stuff, but certainly worth a read, and I encourage you to dig into Plato and read this for yourself to see if you can understand what it might mean to you. So the Master Mason lectures, we have been given a very practical lesson on geometry at the very least. Considering the affinity for architecture at that time and the power of this idea, that may well have been all that was intended. However, it's interesting to wonder if perhaps there was something deeper that was being hinted at by this section of the lecture. I'll be back after the break with some questions you can use in Lodge to start a discussion about this topic. Welcome back. Here are some questions you can use for discussion time in your Lodge. You can certainly think of others, but this is a way to get started. Number one, why do you think this particular material was put in the lecture? Number two, what does this particular part of the lecture mean to you? What did you think when you first heard it? Number three, inasmuch as we have many modern tools to help us lay out right angles, is this portion of the lecture still useful or merely a historical oddity? Number four, is it possible that this really was an allusion to Plato's writings? Number five, now that you know a bit more about Pythagoras, his theorem, and how it came to be, does this change your ideas about what it means to you? I'll be back after the break to discuss the books and references used to create this podcast. The materials used in this podcast were, of course, primarily the Monitor of the Grand Jurisdiction of Nebraska, a book called Euclid's Window, The Story of Geometry from Parallel Lines to Hyperspace by Leonard Mlodinow, ISBN number 0-684-86-524-6. This was one of our recommended books from the Education Committee a few years ago. And no, it's not a geometry book. It's really a very refreshing alternative history of math and quite easy to understand. And as a Mason, very interesting as far as our lectures and our interest in geometry goes. Also used, of course, was Plato's Republic, which can be downloaded for free from Project Gutenberg at www.gutenberg.org. And I also used a printed copy entitled Plato, The Complete Works, edited by John M. Cooper, that I picked up at Barnes & Noble, but I'm sure you can get it at any bookstore. ISBN number 0-87-220-349-2. I hope you've enjoyed this podcast and you take some time to look up these reference pieces and work a little bit with this ratio. It's quite interesting, a very powerful idea, and certainly something as Masons we can also appreciate about our operative brothers. Thank you for listening to this podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. Remember to check the website regularly for more podcasts in this series.